Good afternoon. Welcome once again to Line 1, Your Health Connection on KSKA Anchorage. I'm your host, Dr. Thad Woodard. My guest today is Dr. Bob Gehringer. Dr. Gehringer is an Anchorage orthopedic surgeon for 30 years, specializing in disorders of the shoulder. Our discussion will focus on understanding and treating painful disorders of the shoulder, so you can reach us with your questions and comments. In Anchorage, our local number is 550-8433. 550-8433. Our toll-free number is 1-888-353-5752. And as always, you can also reach us by email. Our email address is line1@alaskapublic.org. Bob, you're reminding me this is the third time you've been here. I appreciate your time.
Oh, I'm glad to be here. It's quite an honor. Thank you.
I don't know about that, but it has been a long time, and probably the last time we talked about shoulders was when you were here. We've hit hips and knees quite a bit. They've had some problems there. We don't seem to have the same problems with the shoulders, but we'll get into that. Let me do one thing first. One thing I need to do is make sure everybody is aware that Dr. Gehringer for a long time has been an underwriter of KSKA. So we'll get that off the table, and anybody can worry about any biases from this, but we really appreciate your supporting KSKA.
I'm happy to do that.
Well, let's start with the anatomy, and this is always, always difficult, particularly I think a joint is difficult, but I want to flesh out some definitions of various things we're going to talk about, and I also want to remind listeners if they have interest and would like to see get a better idea what the shoulder function is all about and some of the terms that we're using, there is a link at alaskapublic.org, our website, of a reasonably good short video that talks about shoulder pain and some of the anatomy. So tell us about the shoulder joint.
Okay. I might also mention I do have a website also, which is okay. Explanatory.
Okay. And we do have a link also at our website. So I didn't realize you had a video or some picture there. Okay.
Yes. Well, to get started, the shoulder is unlike any other joint in the body. It's unique. And it has more motion than any other joint in the body. There are some sacrifices for that, which we may get into today. But the shoulder is virtually unlimited in its range of motion compared to any other joint. There is some sliding in the joint or gliding in the joint, as well as rotation in a ball and socket manner. And this gives us the unique ability to use our whole upper extremity, which, of course, ends in the hand and allows us to do many, many manipulative processes that other animals are unable to do.
And the head of the shoulder is the top part of our humerus, the upper bone in our arm, and it then forms a socket or a joint with what?
Well, the socket is called the glenoid, and it's virtually a flat surface. It's like a golf ball on a tee, you might say, a very large ball on a very small socket. And then the glenoid, which is the socket part, mm-hmm. Is surrounded by a fibrocartilage, which is called the labrum, that goes 360 degrees around the glenoid and forms like, I used to describe it as a tire chalk-like effect that adds some concentricity or some depth to the glenoid and keeps the shoulder more or less in place. But also another important thing about it, even though it acts like a tire chalk to stop the limitation of motion, say the ball out of the socket, it also is the formation of the joint ligaments, which attach to the glenoid and also then to the humerus that keep the ball in the socket.
So I think of the labrum, and I may be wrong, it's kind of like a thick cartilaginous lip on that glenoid. Is that? But it's a major purpose is working hard to help keep the humerus, the head of the humerus, in the joint.
That's correct.
Okay. Yeah. And we're going to talk about some tears of that labrum, so that becomes an important thing to understand. When we talk about the joint capsule, what is meant by that?
It's hard to describe, but it's like a sac, a cylindrical sac that goes all the way around the glenoid and then goes all the way around the humerus to connect the two. But it can accept a little twist. In other words, when the shoulder rotates, when the arm rotates, sac can allow some twist to allow that rotation. But it also retains the stability of the shoulder. Now, there's two kinds of stability in the shoulder. There's static, which is the ligaments, the glenoid, and the joint capsule, but also the muscles, the rotator cuff muscles, and the more powerful muscles in the shoulder, the deltoid, the latissimus dorsi, and the pectoralis.
Okay, so I wanted to get to the rotator cuff. We hear about rotator cuff injuries and tears, and so define that one for us. And that's different than the capsule, though. That we're talking about different things.
The capsule doesn't move. I mean, it moves only by virtue of the shoulder joint moving, and it's a static retainer of the shoulder. In other words, it holds the shoulder in place. The rotator cuff muscles I describe as the steering wheel of the shoulder. If you think about a car, you can have a powerful motor, which would be in the shoulder, the deltoid, the latissimus dorsi, and the pectoralis, which have a lot of power. But you can have a powerful engine, but without a good steering mechanism, the car is going to run off the road, maybe at a pretty fast pace. So the rotator cuff muscles guide the shoulder and keep it in place and help modulate the motion. They're less powerful muscles. They're maybe the largest is probably about the size of three of your fingers. The smallest is about the size of two of your fingers, and there are four of them. There's one in front, two in the top, and one that's sort of along with the another one in back. So one there's sort of one half of one on top and half of one, and one and a half in back.
And those are deep to the major shoulder muscles we all know of, like the deltoids, that muscle in the kind of the top into the upper side of your muscle of your upper extremity, your humerus, where you get your immunizations or where you get shots.
That's correct.
And so these are on the outside, whereas these rotator cuff muscles are underneath there and not really visible.
You never see them. Mm-hmm. You may have some evidence of them in if you look real closely at the shoulder, but you generally never see them. The way the shoulder is made up, going from the inside out, you have the bones, the humerus, and the glenoid. Then outside of that, you have the capsule, including the labrum. Then outside of that are the rotator cuff muscles, which are mostly tendons when they're in the shoulder joint. And then outside of that, you have the more powerful muscles, the deltoid and the pectoralis and latissimus dorsi that I mentioned.
One other word comes to mind, and that is that people may need to understand is the bursa. We hear a lot about bursitis or inflammation of the bursa. What is meant by bursa and bursitis?
Well, a bursa can it's often a diagnosis that's made in the shoulder of quote bursitis. To me, that's not very meaningful. But let's describe what a bursa is and what bursitis is. A bursa acts like a slippery surface. It's sort of like snot. Think about a plastic bag that you put vegetable oil in and the two sides are slippery. That's what a bursa does. It allows, like when you raise your shoulder, it prevents friction in the shoulder joint. When surfaces might rub against each other, it prevents that. Now, what is bursitis? Well, bursitis is an inflammation of that bursa, maybe caused by too much friction, maybe caused by some kind of a inflammatory process such as a virus infection or just overuse, and the bursa doesn't do its job, so the shoulder gets sore, and the bursa becomes, quote, inflamed.
One more piece of anatomy that may come up a little bit during the program is a large, what we call a plexus of nerves, the brachial plexus, which is up in your armpit. Why do we need to think about that? Let me answer my own question. This is an area that might get injured with shoulder injuries is what I'm thinking about. Is there other reasons that we might need to make sure people understand what's up in the armpit underneath your shoulder?
Well, actually,
Brachial plexus?
Brachial plexus, yes. Yeah. Actually, that's a little more central than in the armpit.
Okay.
But what often gets injured relating to the brachial plexus is the axillary nerve, because that goes through the armpit, and in a dislocation, it might stretch or it might even be torn. In some cases, it can be torn. That's rare. Usually, it just gets a simple stretch, and maybe it becomes deadened for a while, and then it recovers. But actually, when a brachial plexus injury occurs, it's usually where a person lands on their side with their neck pushed to the opposite side and their shoulder pushed down. That puts a big stretch on the brachial plexus.
Yeah. So moving your head in one direction and shoulder the opposite direction.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. My anatomy after 30 years, I'm somewhat embarrassed. But all right, let's take a phone call. We have a caller already. SJ, what can we do for you?
Hi. Doctors, thanks for having me on. I had a question about kind of the placement of the head of the humerus in the shoulder joint. I've had shoulder surgery before, reconstruction of the capsule. And something that I was told by the physical therapist back then, and I've been told by an occupational therapist and a couple of other people since then, is that my shoulders, or the head of my humerus sits forward in the joint, which causes me problems. I've had a bit of, you know, what they call subluxing, like little minor dislocations since the surgery and things. And I'm wondering if that's typical or what can be done about that? Something like a head of a humerus sitting out of place in the joint.
Okay, doesn't sound good to me, but let's ask Dr. Geringer.
Well, shoulder subluxing can be treated in two ways. And it sounds like your physical therapist has done the first way, which is to exercise, specifically to exercise the rotator cuff muscles. And like I was saying earlier, the rotator cuff muscles are the steering wheel in the shoulder and help to centralize it. So it sounds like you've already done that, and now your therapist is saying that there's something else wrong. So the next step would be to do what we call a capsulorraphy, but let's get away from that word and just say tighten the capsule. And that makes the capsule, which is, like I said earlier, the static constrainer of the shoulder, that makes it do a better or more effective job of holding the shoulder in place. So it may be that you need what we would call an anterior, meaning a front capsulorraphy. That would be tightening the front capsule. That would be a surgical procedure.
And then, I'm wondering about a procedure where you're tightening the capsule or something. I understand they do that through like an ultrasonic or infrared source or something like that. But do you end up with range of motion issues after that? I mean, is it kind of a trade-off between loose shoulders, so to speak, and restricted range of motion?
Well, yes. Yes and no. Tightening the capsule is something that has to be done, at least in my opinion, by experience. A surgeon has to know how tight the capsule should be made. Yes, there is a radio frequency or a microwave treatment. It has been controversial. Unfortunately, I think it's a good procedure, but was used, overused or used improperly and got a bad rap. I've done probably a couple hundred of them, and I haven't had any of the complications that have been reported nationally. But it is a good procedure, but it is controversial for the reasons that I said. Often it can be used in conjunction with, say, stitching up the capsule a little bit. And all of that can be done with an arthroscope, that meaning that we look into the joint with a small telescope-like device that can fit into the joint. We can see what we're looking at on a television screen, which we call a monitor, and we can modulate what we're doing as it's being done on the television screen.
What about, I have a question, it's not being a surgeon, that when you have a little bit of this subluxation, my thought was more that it maybe the labrum is torn, or where does the labrum come in to the issue of some subluxation, since the labrum also is trying to hold that head of the humerus into the glenoid?
Well, like we discussed earlier, the ligaments, the labrum is the attachment of the ligaments to the glenoid.
Okay.
So that if there is a detachment, this is the way I describe it to patients, is that if the labrum is torn, the boat's not tied to the dock, so it's going to float away.
All right.
Now, the labrum may be attached to the glenoid, and the boat may be tied to the dock, but maybe the lines are too loose, so there's a lot of slack. That's where this gentleman is talking about the slipping in and out.
Gotcha.
Okay. Right.
Great. Thank you so much.
Okay. Good luck, SJ. Well, I wanted to ask about mechanisms of injury, but since you brought up arthroscopy and we were talking before we went on the air about some major advances that arthroscopy has led to, explain arthroscopy a little bit to us again and how it's changed what you're saying is a much more willingness to address shoulder problems because of the advent of arthroscopy.
Well, in the past, cutting into a shoulder was kind of a daunting procedure for both patient and surgeon. And I describe it simply as the old way of operating a shoulder where we had to make a large incision and, quote, open up the shoulder is like standing in front of a cave and looking inside, whereas arthroscopy is like walking into the cave and looking around. And you get a much better view. You see a lot of things that maybe you couldn't see standing from the outside and looking in. And you get a view, say, from the back or a view from the front. So you can pretty well see everything that's in the shoulder with an arthroscope. They're about 5/16 of an inch in diameter. That's a little more than a quarter inch in diameter a shoulder scope is.
Mm-hmm. And you had said also that even with the advent of the best MRI technology, if they're done really well, if I remember or understand you well, that the laparoscope still now allows you to find some things that will not be necessarily seen on the MRI.
Okay. Yeah, that's true. And generally, when I operate a shoulder, what I see with the arthroscope is better seen than what was seen on the MRI scan. I often describe it as looking at a movie in black and white versus looking at a movie in Technicolor. Mm-hmm. So you see more definition once you're inside the shoulder. I often see more than what the MRI showed.
Yeah. And another thing that's important for people to understand is when you're doing these MRIs, you have to make a decision on how frequently and what depth you're making individual cuts. And we're talking, as you mentioned, 2, 3, or 4 millimeter cuts. And you have to make the right decision there to pick up some of the detail that you're looking for. So you could do the right MRI on the right joint and not with the right detail and not get and miss some things as well.
Well, MRIs are not a perfect view in the shoulder, but you know, they're a heck of a lot better than what we had. We got to look in the shoulder without actually going in, and that's a big plus. Mm-hmm. But you know, as I said, it does have its limitations, and one of the limitations is sometimes a labral tear can be missed, and there are areas in the shoulder that will look like there's a rotator cuff tear, but a radiologist can describe better than I can. There's a area in the shoulder called the magic angle, often referred to by radiologists, that can look like a rotator cuff tear, but it's not.
Let me remind listeners once again that you're listening to Line 1, Your Health Connection. My guest today is Dr. Robert Gehringer. He's an orthopedic surgeon in Anchorage. That's his third time he's been on the program, and we're limiting our discussion to disorders of the shoulder, which is what Dr. Gehringer is an expert on. If you've got questions or comments, our local number is 550-8433. Our toll-free number 1-888-353-5752. And our email address is line1@alaskapublic.org. Also, if you go to alaskapublic.org and look up the Line 1 website, our link, you will find some links to Dr. Gehringer's website, a video on the anatomy of the shoulder, which also Dr. Gehringer has on his site, and a couple of other sites from the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons and the National Institutes of Health on shoulder disorders to help anybody who wants to get more information about these problems. Bob, you were talking about earlier that the shoulder joint moves more than any other shoulder or any other joint in our body, and that's good news. And usually when there's good news, there's bad news, and you plot that there's a downside to that.
Well, the downside is the contact forces that come into play. You know, for example, the jumping jack maneuver or the windmill maneuver of a shoulder, where you can just basically move the shoulder 360 degrees around your side. There are downsides to that, where part of the shoulder blade is contacted by a part of the humerus, which we call impingement. And because of that, the rotator cuff is often trapped between those. Now, we talked between those two bones as we raise the arm above shoulder level or above chest level. Now, we talked about the bursa. Normally, the bursa prevents any problem by the gliding or the smoothing effect that it provides. But if that's done too much over time, and generally if it's, you know, it occurs when a person reaches their middle age, let's say 45 or 50, that they begin to get those impingement problems, and it wears on the rotator cuff, it can eventually lead to a rotator cuff tear. That's partly my opinion, but I really think, with what I've seen in so many years of experience of looking at shoulders, that impingement, along with some other factors, blood supply for one of them and bursitis for another, that impingement is the major cause of rotator cuff tears.
Okay. Let's take one more call. We've had a number of calls come in since the last time we took any. Bob, you're on line one. What can we do for you?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. About 8 or 10 years ago, I was diagnosed by my general practitioner with bursitis. He recommended a specialist in Wasilla, mainly due to my medical insurance. Wasilla was the closest place that he could go visit a specialist. The specialist took some more x-rays, said, yes, you have bursitis. The only surgeon you can go to, because of my medical insurance, again, is in Fairbanks. We scheduled the surgery in Fairbanks. I drove up to Fairbanks, got there. Doctor said, we're going to have to reschedule because your medical insurance allows us to bump you for someone who's paying more or something like that. take some leave, and we'll reschedule the surgery.
Yeah.
Well, I took the leave, uh-huh. And 8 years later, I found that as long as I keep my shoulders warm, maybe once or twice a year, I can take some leave and it's fine. Was that a misdiagnosis?
Thank God for insurance companies, huh?
Yeah, was the surgery something that was an extreme thing to do? Is this something that's getting worse as I get older?
Yeah, we need to understand this one. Good. All right, Bob?
My advice to you, Bob, is to get an MRI scan and see what you do have. Bursitis, to me, is a symptom of a problem caused by a problem in the shoulder. It's not a problem in itself. It's a symptom of a problem.
Yeah, from what they said I had a slightly malformed bone that was slightly impinging on a nerve. And that's what they call.
No, it doesn't impinge. It doesn't impinge on a nerve. It feels like it to you or to any patient, but it's not impingement on a nerve. It's two bones pinching each other. And it's the sensation of a pinched nerve, but it's not a pinched nerve.
And is this something, since this was 8 years ago, and I keep my shoulders warm, especially during the winter, once or twice, maybe three or four times a year, I take a couple of leave and I'm fine.
Yeah. How old are you, Bob?
I am 48.
Okay. And what do you do? Do you do any?
I do building maintenance for a living.
Okay. All right, I'm a pediatrician, just trying to get to know you. No, I just thought those might be important questions. Let's see what. I know before we went on the air, there was a lot of discussion about putting things off that come back to haunt you. So I wanted to see if Dr. Geringer feels this is important. So,
okay.
Well, Bob, my advice to you is that you've had a problem that you've been nursing along for 8 years. Get an MRI scan and see what you've been nursing along. It may be that you have nothing that's important, but it may be that you've been nursing along a problem that should be addressed and should be taken care of. And an MRI has revolutionized, along with arthroscopy, what we do in shoulders. And those two things have really changed the way we treat shoulders in the last 10 or 15 years.
So, and one of the reasons for that is that sometimes putting this off is you're really going to pay the price later, and it may be difficult to impossible to fix what's happened. Is that
well? That's possible. That's possible. Yes.
Yeah.
So So it could be getting worse then, is what you're saying.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
All righty. Thanks for your call. We have a question about rotator cuff as well, so let's go ahead and address that one. Gary, you're on line one.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Dr. Geringer, I recently had an MRI on my shoulder. I have had surgery on my rotator cuff about 8 years ago, and everything was fine. And then due to some falls and some other things, my shoulder started acting up again. I went to the doctor. They did an MRI, and they tell me that my rotator cuff now is pretty much destroyed, and there's nothing they can do about it. And I, you know, other than come in and get some cortisone shots or something like that, and I wonder if that's true.
Well, it's not true, but but for someone your age, did you say you're 48, or was
no,
that
no,
the first?
I'm 70.
Oh, you're 70. Okay. And what is your activity level, Gary?
Well, it's pretty good. I mean, you know, I'm a very active person, and I'm also an artist, and it's my right arm which I use, so. I'm concerned.
Okay. Well, you might go talk to a physician about a reverse prosthesis. That reverses the ball and socket. It makes the humerus the socket and the socket the ball. And that bypasses the rotator cuff entirely. If you're not too active a person, in other words, if you're not changing tires or putting up carpentry framing and things of that nature, if you're not too active, it would be a good solution for you. So it's something that you might talk to a doctor about.
But what if I were more active than that?
The problem with it is the socket. And when you put anything in the socket, I said earlier on the program that the socket, the glenoid, is part of the shoulder blade, and it's like a golf tee. That means that it narrows down at a pretty sharp angle, and there's just not a lot of bone left there to hold a prosthesis that we put in. So if you're very active, you can have that prosthesis loosen. Usually it happens in the glenoid or in the socket part. So that's why you would not want to be too active. If you're an artist and, you know, you don't do a lot of clay modeling or things like that, but you do painting, or things that are more down at waist level, it might be a good solution for you, and you should talk to an orthopedic surgeon about that. There are surgeons in Anchorage who do that procedure.
We do the reverse prosthesis then.
That's correct.
Okay. Okay, well, I guess do you do that?
I do not.
You do not. Okay. So I just have to find one.
I would be glad to make a referral if you call my office.
Yeah.
Okay, I will do that.
All right, and Gary, the next question I think is going to have another question about reverse shoulder replacement. We're going to go ahead and take that, so you might want to hang on and listen to that answer too.
Okay, thank you very much.
You bet. Good luck. John, you're on line one. What can we do for you?
Yeah, thank you for letting me on. I had a mountain climbing accident in Italy and busted my shoulder and wound up having a reverse shoulder replacement. A two-part question. When I fell off the mountain, I got back up, walked out, wasn't very painful. Went to the emergency room in Cortina. They reset it. That was painful. Came home okay. Had the replacement. And I'm doing some limited exercise. But the first question is, when I fell off, it wasn't extremely painful or anything. Well, and I didn't have any swelling or anything in that arm, although I had extensive bruising on my chest. And it's second question, I guess you already answered, is your physical activity. Obviously, I can't chop wood anymore. So can you answer the first question? I'm kind of curious about how I broke it that way.
Well, I don't know. Without seeing your x-rays or seeing a report of your injury, I don't know. Sometimes it's appropriate to do a reverse prosthesis right after an injury. So
yeah.
I can't answer your question because of that.
Okay. And I think you answered my question before. I am working now with a personal trainer trying to, this has been over a year ago since operation, to get some muscle mass back and, a little more strength in the arm. And we're not overdoing it. I'm not lifting heavy weights or anything, about 12 pounds at the most.
Well, let me say this about the reverse prosthesis. When it fails, there are bailout procedures for the reverse prosthesis. And you might want to talk to a surgeon about that. That's another option for you. But you will probably never have a great shoulder.
I realize that, you know. It's functional. I can comb my hair, things like that, and eat with it and drive a car. And it's still sore, still stiff, but it's not very painful either. So.
Well, if you're functioning well, then maybe that's what you should do. You know, good intentions don't always get good results.
Well, thank you very much.
All right. Thanks for your call, John. All right. It's about time for us to take our mid-program break. So I want to remind listeners you're listening to Line 1, your health connection, and our local number is 550-8433. Our toll-free number 1-888-353-5752. Our email address, line1@alaskapublic.org. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be back with Dr. Bob Gehringer. I'm Dr. Thad Woodard.
You're listening to Line 1, your health connection on KSKA Anchorage. If you missed part of today's program or would like to listen again to Line 1, your health connection, the program repeats tonight at 7 on FM 91.1. Remember, tonight's rebroadcast is recorded and will not be taking phone calls. You can subscribe to free podcasts of Line 1, your health connection on our website at alaskapublic.org. This is KSKA Anchorage.
Welcome back. This is Line 1, your health connection on KSKA Anchorage. I'm your host, Dr. Thad Woodard. Our topic has been painful shoulders. Our guest is Anchorage orthopedic surgeon, Dr. Bob Gehringer. You can email us with your questions at line1@alaskapublic.org. You can call locally during the program at 550-8433. Our toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752. And as you have heard, if you are listening between 7 and 8 on a Monday night, you're not going to be able to get us. We won't be here. We won't be able to answer your questions. However, go to alaskapublic.org at any time, and you can find a way to listen to today's program and many, many of our past programs. I also want to take one brief second to remind listeners there's a series of discussions going on about local access to Medicare. Any questions you have about local access to Medicare is being addressed by the Medicare Information Office. This has been supported by the Anchorage Faith and Action Congregations Together. There are two more scheduled meetings. You need to write this down. The next one is this Sunday from 1:30 to 2:30 at St. Elizabeth Ann Seton School or Church. 1:30 to 2:30 Sunday, St. Elizabeth Ann Seton. And then Thursday the 21st at Lutheran Church of Hope from 5:30 to 6:30. We had an email that came in and asked two questions. And the first one, is there a difference between tendonitis and tendinosis?
Well, that deals with the Greek suffixes of the word tendon. itis means an inflammation of, osis means a condition of. Basically, tendonitis and tendinosis are the same condition.
Okay. And the second question is, what shoulder conditions are better treated with rest than with physical therapy?
I think that putting any joint to rest, except perhaps the back, and we don't want to get into that, that's a whole other topic, is best not treated with rest. I think maybe there might be a condition of gout or a condition of infection where maybe rest for a short period of time is a good idea. But generally, I think a shoulder problem or any joint problem is best not treated by rest. Alone.
Yeah, and partly that was because a joint kept at rest and may lose mobility. I'm not sure if you said that. I was looking at my screens here, but that's okay. One of the reasons you want to keep that joint moving, and if you don't, you can lose some motion potentially.
That's called a frozen shoulder.
Yep. Not a good thing.
Not a good thing.
All right, Mark, you're on line one.
Well, good afternoon, Dr. Gehringer. I'm a 62-year-old electrician. I had my right shoulder replaced. It was a semi-replacement at age 60. It was due to arthritis. My left shoulder is arthritic as well, but not as bad as the right, so I just had the one replaced. And after that, I've had what ends up being a bicep tendon insertion into the upper part of the arm that would be painful. And I went to a massage therapist for a while, and that seems to have taken care of it. But now I'm getting the same problem on the left shoulder where it seems to be the bicep tendon that aches. And I'm wondering if that's how that ties into shoulder issues.
Well, it's hard to explain the anatomy of the biceps tendon over the radio, but simply speaking, the biceps tendon starts up inside the joint and is one of the two tendons that originate for the biceps muscle. The biceps tendon slides through a groove. So think about a frayed rope that's sliding over a pulley or sliding through a groove, and the fibers of the rope are catching. Now, in living tissue, that's going to cause pain. That is one form of biceps tendonitis. But biceps tendonitis can mimic other conditions in the shoulder. So my advice is to get an MRI scan to make sure.
Okay. Now, once the shoulder has been replaced, you know, there's a new head in the humerus, would the bicep tendon be sliding over that new head, or is it still sliding over bone?
It depends on how the surgeon did your surgery. In most surgeons do a biceps tenodesis, so the biceps is no longer sliding through that groove. It's fastened usually in the groove or just below it.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Tony, you're on line one.
Hi. Thank you very much for taking my call. I would like to know about the liftoff test. I'm sort of self-diagnosing off the internet, trying to get to a doctor. But I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about, you know, abnormal lift-off tests when there isn't a whole lot of other things showing up other than weakness and some pain that is in the behind the shoulder blade and somewhat in the neck, but an MRI ruled out any neck problems.
Okay. The liftoff test is a test specifically for the rotator cuff muscle in front. And it's done by reaching behind your back and then pushing your hand away from your back against resistance. If it's weak, that's a good test for the subscapularis tendon, which is the rotator cuff muscle in the front of the shoulder. Earlier in the program, I think I might have discussed that there are four rotator cuff muscles, one in front, two on top, and one and a half on top, and one and a half in the back. So that's a test for the one in front. There's also other tests for it too.
So if you have a weak liftoff test, which I have a weak liftoff test, I can't barely do something. It's a very bizarre feeling actually. That would mean, but the pain is in the behind the shoulder blade. Would that be where the pain would come from if you had that tear?
The subscapularis originates on the shoulder blade, so you might have pain in the shoulder blade as a result of that, yes.
Okay.
You should get an MRI scan.
Get a what? I'm sorry?
Get an MRI scan.
Okay, and that will show it up good enough, and I don't need to have one of those, what did you call it, arthroscopic?
Laparoscopic.
Yeah. Well, arthroscopic is into a joint. Laparoscopic is into an abdomen.
Yep.
But an MRI scan should show that, yes. And anytime I tell a patient to get an MRI scan, I'm thinking surgery. So that's the only way to fix that tear if it exists.
Okay, and the liftoff test is a pretty good indication that there's a tear?
Of the subscapularis muscle, yes.
Okay. Thank you very much for your time and your information.
You bet, Tony. Good luck.
Thanks.
Charles, you're on line one.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, doctor. I used to play a lot of tennis, and there was a lot of rotator cuff surgery in my family, so I quit several years ago playing tennis. And then a couple of years, that was several years ago, and then a couple of years ago I started having shoulder pain. So I went to the clinic at Providence, and the doctor did not want to do an MRI scan. He examined my shoulder, and he recommended I start with the rubber band therapy, with those the different color rubber bands to exercise the shoulder. So I started with that, and then I went back, and then he told me to go and do weightlifting. So I did all that weightlifting, and eventually my shoulder got stronger, and then I started taking glucosamine and noni juice, and noni for the shoulder, and pretty much it's all healed. But I still have, and I shoveled snow this morning without a problem. And I still have good range of motion. But I still have, when I move my shoulder, I can still feel those little bumps as I rotate the shoulder around. But I've got good strength in it. And so I really don't know what the he didn't want to do an MRI way back when.
Well, I don't know why he gave you that advice. It may have been good advice. It may not have been. I don't know. But if you've had a persistent problem in the shoulder, and now I'm thinking on this program, why didn't I invest in an MRI scanner? But my advice would be to get the MRI scan. It's not an inexpensive test, but it beats living with a sore shoulder for a long time and maybe finding something that's fixable.
Yeah, but now I don't have much soreness. I just I take a bunch of glucosamine every day, and that seemed to help a great deal. That seemed to help repair whatever was happening there. And now, but I still have I'm really not back to 100%, but I can still feel those as I rotate my shoulder around. And do those? I still feel those bumps, those little snaps.
You know, the radiologists are going to love me on this program because I'm giving you the advice: get an MRI scan.
Yeah, I think Bob's saying you really need to figure out what it is. I'm a little skeptical that glucosamine is solving your problems. I mean, you're obviously better. I don't know where Bob stands on this, but there's been lots of looking at glucosamine and chondroitin sulfate and so forth. And maybe in a few people it makes a little difference. But if you really stop and think of it, I heard a good analogy. It's like taking and swallowing hair to replace baldness. It doesn't work that way. Just because you take chondroitin sulfate or glucosamine doesn't mean it's going to go to your joint. It's going to get out of your stomach. So keep an open mind that there may be other things going on. And I think Bob's advice is just really want to figure out what's really happening, and maybe you can save yourself some misery down the road.
Okay.
All righty.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Have a good day.
You too, sir.
Here's an email. I've been tentatively diagnosed with supraspinatus calcific tendonitis after an exam and x-ray. I'm confused about whether this image on the x-ray, which is about the size of a ping pong ball, I think is what it says, is still in the form of toothpaste or has it solidified. I'm confused as to whether surgery will help. As the surgeon indicated, this calcium is encompassing and co-joined with my entire rotator cuff. Why does the pain come so severe during sleep, even when I'm not using it or laying on it? And the pain is also in my lateral neck, my tricep, and my lateral forearm. I'm healthy, athletic, and 50 with good muscle tone. So here's a guy with some tendonitis problems that are...
You know, calcific tendonitis is a great problem to see in the office because a surgeon can give an injection of cortisone, and many times, I won't say 9 times out of 10, but at least 8 times out of 10, he may never see the patient again. Now, if you have calcium the size of a ping pong ball, which is what I'm guessing you have, that's a pretty big bit of calcium, and injections may make you feel better and may make the calcium absorb, but you may need to have an arthroscopic extraction of the calcium. And if it's that big a deposit, then you may need to have some of the tendon fibers stitched together. And that would be a rotator cuff repair. Not as bad as some of the rotator cuff repairs are, but it would be a repair to fill in the gap.
What about the steroid injection idea that you suggested? What's the risks? What's the benefits? When's it used appropriately? When's it not being used appropriately?
The times that it's not being used appropriately is when it's being overused. In my practice, I limit injections to three. If the third injection is not making it better, then we have to find another solution. What are the side effects of it? Well, if you're diabetic, it may raise your blood sugar, but that's a temporary raise. There's a lot of side effects of cortisone, but most of those are not pertinent in a cortisone injection in a shoulder. A cortisone injection in a shoulder is one of the biggest benefits of treatment that we can give to a shoulder. It's probably the most frequently used cortisone injection into a joint is an injection into a shoulder.
And what the steroid does is it dampens down all the inflammatory mediators. It stops the inflammation, and at times what I'm hearing you say, that resolves the problem. However, if it keeps coming back, that's not the long-term answer.
That's correct.
Okay. All right, Bill, you're on line one. What can we do for you?
Thanks for taking the call. I just wanted to see possibly what part of the shoulder is causing the pain I have, and it always happens when I'm brushing snow off the top of the car. And with my right arm, and it's when I'm brushing to the right, not to the left. And I just wondered, maybe the MRI, of course, like you've been suggesting, is the way to go on this. But
well, it sounds like you have impingement, and what's happening is that a part of your humerus is rubbing against a part of your shoulder blade called the acromion, which is like a marquee or an awning over the top of the shoulder that muscles attach to. But when you raise your arm to shoulder level or above, the two bones of the shoulder blade and the humerus come together and rub, and sometimes can cause a condition we call impingement that results in a sore tendon, tendonitis, sometimes described as bursitis, which may or may not exist. Like I've said earlier on the program, bursitis is a symptom of a problem, not a problem itself.
Okay.
So.
All right. So it's something I should go and take a look at, though. It's nothing that's going to go away, I assume.
Probably not.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
If I didn't get rid of the question, here's a comment this time I think you might appreciate. Bob says, thanks, Dr. Gehringer. You're the greatest. You gave me my life back. 10 years ago, you worked on my shoulder, and it passed unintended durability tests. I tell everyone that has pain that should go get it. I get to you before you retire. I just can't thank you enough. And I don't think he's he's a radiologist, but he's returning the favors.
I didn't come on this program for acclamations.
I know. We always worry you're going to find someone who's unhappy, but I thought you'd appreciate surgeons are not going to win over everybody. But thanks for that note. I won't give you the name. All right, here's another email. I took a fall off a ladder this Christmas onto an outstretched arm. I'm guessing that I probably damaged the labrum. I've lost some range of motion, and I still have some soreness. Is there exercise or physical therapy routine that might help get this to heal without surgery?
Well, physical therapy is always a good start. And it depends on when you fell off the ladder, how you impacted your shoulder. If you fell on your outstretched arm or if you fell on the point of your shoulder, that would be likely to cause two different types of problems. So my advice is try physical therapy. And your therapist will advise you when things are not working, maybe to see a doctor about it then. But that therapy would be a good start.
All right. Martha, you're on line one.
Thank you. I've had an MRI, and I do have a tear in the long head of the biceps. And we have tried both steroid injections and physical therapy without significant improvement. So I'm now considering surgery. And my question is how to find the best surgeon to do the job. What questions do I need to ask? How can I get information? And are there highly qualified people in Anchorage?
Can I plead the fifth on that?
Well, these are great questions.
Yeah, it is a good question. And if you have a tendonitis of your biceps, Earlier, I was talking to one of the gentlemen that called in about the biceps tendon slides through a groove, and sometimes there's catching as it slides through the groove, and so it's painful. So what we do is we call it...
Well, it's a tear in the bicep, too. So.
Yeah, well, it is. Yeah, it's like a frayed rope. But but a tenodesis can take care of that problem. And it's easily done either arthroscopically or open, and it, and there are a lot of surgeons in town who can do that.
Okay. And how does one find the best surgeon? What questions should I be asking people, and how do I get that information?
My advice is go pick a surgeon based on your knowledge or your friend's opinions, and go talk to him. If you like him, that's probably your best choice. If he doesn't make you feel good when you see him, then pick another surgeon.
Okay.
Bob, Martha asked about qualifications. Most of these disorders we're talking about today, with the exception of the reverse prosthesis, it sounds like to me most surgeons in Anchorage are trained to answer these questions and solve these problems. Is that fair to say?
Yes.
Is there generally good success rates on the prosthesis?
Right. Yeah, that's where things get a little bit more difficult, because it may be, you know, you're not necessarily comparing apples and oranges. I mean, it may not be the same thing, and so some surgeons may take on more difficult situations. They have different outcomes. So these abilities to rate those questions are, to me, are difficult. But let me see what Bob has to say.
Well, my advice is, if the surgeon seems to feel comfortable about what he advises you, and you feel comfortable with him, then he probably is a good choice. Biceps tenodesis is not a difficult surgery to do. Some surgeons are more comfortable using an arthroscope to do that surgery, and other surgeons might do it with open surgery, but it doesn't make any difference. If you're happy with the surgeon and it's a easy surgery to get a good result, go to a surgeon that you're happy with and that makes you feel good.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yeah. Good luck, Martha.
Bye.
Here's an email. I had a rotator cuff repair to both shoulders. I have had rotator cuff repair. In choosing a surgeon, I found that there were some who were doing these procedures exclusively with arthroscopy, while others were doing part of the procedure with the scope and then opening the shoulder for the other portions of repair. Intuitively, I felt that full exposure would be a better opportunity for success, particularly when the cuff was fully retracted. Was I mistaken? Am I mistaken, he's asking. Does it make a difference on how you do the rotator cuff, or does it depend on the rotator cuff lesion and the patient specifically?
Well, that can be a complicated question. The short answer is that with a retracted chronic rotator cuff tear, probably an open repair is best. The reason for that is because other things can be done. Now, arthroscopically, an onlay graft can be done to enhance the quality of the repair. But done open, it's a much better onlay graft. There are surgeons that do a pretty good job of onlay grafts to enhance the quality of that repair. But you have to have one that's pretty experienced with doing that particular procedure arthroscopically. And another thing too is that the quality of the tendon, if it's a chronic retracted tear like that, sometimes it just can't hold a stitch, and in that case an open repair often is better. To do arthroscopy, the instruments have to pass through a fairly narrow tube, and with an open procedure the instruments can be much larger, and you can accomplish a little bit more effective repair that way in some cases. I do it both ways, and it depends on the configuration of the tear. It depends on the quality of the tendon that remains, and sometimes tears can be very complex. They could be multi-layered, for example, two or three layers, and it really depends on the quality of the tendon and what is the best choice for the patient. I choose what is best for the patient. The golden rule is what I try to follow. Do unto others.
All right, William, you're on line one.
Yes, thank you, and I never miss this show. So 3 weeks ago, and we had rain on ice. I'm in my backyard, my dog, and my both feet flew out from underneath me, and my body descended toward Earth, completely parallel to it. And I instinctively...
Are you an author?
I instinctively put my right arm out perpendicular to my body, so all my body weight was transmitted all the way up my arm to my shoulder. And I had never had a dislocated shoulder before, but I realized something was seriously wrong when I couldn't lift my toothbrush to my mouth. But 4 days later, I was leaning on my elbow on the couch, and I heard this really loud pop, and my shoulder popped back into place. And I immediately gained all my use of its motion. The last thing, it's completely back to normal, except for the last thing to completely heal is like when the other guy was talking about lifting his arm at shoulder height or lifting some weight. Imagine like if you're sitting in your car, if you got groceries in the passenger side and you pick up the bag, that's the only part that hurts anymore. I attribute my recovery to the fact that I've been doing yoga for a year now. So I guess my question is, well, I don't have health insurance, so I'm not really interested in having a MRI or the other things, but the other thing that I noticed, I had a big giant bruise that went all the way up from the crease of my elbow up to my shoulder. So, I mean, does it sound like I had a dislocated shoulder and now it's coming back? I know it's kind of hard.
We're gonna have Bob give you an answer because we're getting out of time here.
Hey, look, I don't have any stock in GE or any of the radiology companies, the X-ray machines or anything of that nature, but my advice is you better get an MRI scan because I think the chances are real good you have a rotator cuff tear. Now, the natural history of those is that they will get better, then they'll come back again, they'll get better, and they'll come back again, and you tend to think they're going to get better, but they don't because they keep coming back. Get an MRI scan.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
All right. Don't go to the outhouse or the bed. Yeah, just, yeah. Unfortunately, sometimes that's the answer you don't want to hear. Well, good luck, William.
Thank you.
All right. We have a couple more calls and emails, but we just don't have time to take those. My apologies. There's lots of issues I wanted to get into. We didn't, so maybe we'll have to get Dr. Geringer or another orthopedic surgeon back to discuss shoulders again. There were plenty of questions. Bob, thanks very much. You do a great job.
I loved it. I enjoy being on the show. It's a lot of fun.
Thanks for your help for KSKA also.
You're welcome.
Next week, well, let me remind everybody, if you want to continue this conversation, we can also do that by joining KSKA on Facebook, and you find the link on our website, alaskapublic.org. Next Monday is President's Day. We will take the day off for the studio, and Line 1 will not be here. We will return in 2 weeks on Monday, February 25th. At that time, Prentice Pemberton, who's been my co-host a couple times now, is going to do that again. And we're going to be talking with Anchorage child and adolescent psychiatrist Dr. Robert Wald. What we want to do is help people understand this issue about pediatric bipolar illness. And so we'll talk about whether that's a real and appropriate diagnosis and what can be done if it is. In addition, if we have time, we're going to get into attention deficit disorder. Why don't you tune into your health and learn more Monday, February 25th from 2 to 3 p.m., repeating the same evening at 7 on FM 91.1 KSKA. Pat Yak is Vice President of Public Media. Kristen Spack is our web editor and helped with your audio portion today. Thanks for listening. I'm Dr. Thad Woodard. Have a great day.
Line 1, Your Health Connection is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect KSKA or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies can be purchased by calling 550-8400. This is KSKA Anchorage.